in order to consume whatever you're going to tell them. And that's not easy in a nonfiction world. I mean, here we have, I got a merger and acquisition story for you, dog. Here I was at the boardroom and somebody yelled at me. I'm like, okay, what else you got? You know, so we don't embellish, but we have to go dig deeper into, like, tell me the conflict. You know, who are you up against? Tell me what was at stake here, and try to build some intrigue with it. So not everybody should write, but most everybody should publish.
That's interesting. Wait, what does that mean? Dig deeper into that, and I'll come back and ask you some other questions. You just said not everyone should write, but everybody should publish. What is that? Welcome to the Onyx and Gall Show, and today we're going to talk about books. Should you write a book? This is a real question. Listen, most people, I believe, this is my belief, and let's see if our guest today agrees. I think most people should write a book. My uncle right now, who is a retired executive from a company who worked at a job for decades, who climbed the ladder, who did amazing things, he's 70 plus years old. He's writing a book. He's been writing it for a year and a half. I'm dying. I've been waiting to ask him every 2 weeks, where is it? Because the joke I've always had with my uncle is he's literally came to America on a boat. He's the only person I know that actually came on a boat. And can you imagine the life experiences, I mean, that he has had, the things he's learned? And I didn't realize that this was an actual thing. I didn't realize that a lot of executives and a lot of people who've had these tremendous experiences actually are out there writing books. And for me, books have changed my career, have changed my life. I wouldn't be where I am today talking to you on this podcast if I didn't write books. And as a matter of fact, I haven't written a new book since 2018. And it's now 2023. I can't remember. And that sucks. And I need to get back to it. So I'm actually in the process now of writing multiple books. And our guest doesn't know this, but I might even be poking him and his wife later to say, hey, can you help me write one of my upcoming books? I think books are radically important. But here's a stat that I'm gonna steal our guest's thunder a little bit. I'm going to steal a stat that he revealed to me before we began this episode. But he revealed it to me. 81%, he said, 81% of people want to write a book. 1% actually do it. Holy smokes. So let's dive into why that is. And let's see, by the end of this episode, you'll know whether you should be writing a book about yourself, for yourself, how to use it. Is it useful for you? Should you invest the time? And if you decide, yes, you should, we'll get into how to write that book as well. Now, our guest today is Doug Crow. Doug, what is up, my friend? I'm so excited to have you. I got to tell everyone the fun story. Doug and I connected years ago where he was just telling me, he wrote a press release for me at that time. He didn't even know who I was. His team brought something I did to his table. But then we had this event that I did in October of 2022 called the Expert Summit, which if you guys think you qualify to come, I do these every few months, go to expertsummit.com. And Doug and his wife, Jen, showed up at this event. And I think we connected right away. It was one of those things where we started talking and it was just like, all right, we're meant to talk more. I absolutely fell in love with him and his wife. They're awesome. I'm a little disappointed Jen's not here today on this podcast. So you let her know, Doug, that we missed her. But you know what? And when I went to him, I said, what do you do? And he starts telling me, he's like, hey, we help people that are, you know, executives write books. And I'm looking at him like, that's a thing? Literally was my first thing. He's like, yeah. I'm like, my uncle's doing it. I didn't know that's a thing. And now that I've just fallen in love with the idea. And so I'm super excited to have you on the podcast today, Doug. Thanks for being here. And let's dive in, man. First of all, do talk a little bit about how you fell into this world, books. I mean, just start. And then I want to dive in. I want to really have our listeners figure out today if they should write a book, if it will be helpful to them or not. And if so, what's the least overwhelming way to do it? But yeah, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. Honored to be here. I can't wait to dive in this as well. And we'll definitely talk about if you should write a book and why and how in a moment. The way I got into this, like a lot of entrepreneurs, was by accident. It's a long story. The short version is I was in real estate for 20 years, had a radio show on ABC about real estate, and 2008 happened and everything went down the drain. During my boohoo phase, I wrote a book, and the book was awful, and it was absolutely drivel. And I knew that looking at it, I'm like, I didn't even publish it. But being in the radio, I was able to talk to some people who we know who had done very well, like Laura Langmire. She's a, you know, 3 times New York Times bestseller. Robert Kiyosaki was on my show a couple of times. And I had a chance to ask them, like, how does book thing work? And, you know, Kiyosaki is very famous as saying, he's like, oh, I'm a best-selling author. I'm not a best-selling writer. I don't write, you know, and Laurel's very, he goes, no, I've never written a book in my life. And she's, you know, done great with it. So publishing a book is something that's very vital to most entrepreneurs and business owners. Actually writing, we'll get to that. When I started figuring out that I could actually design a journalist ghostwriting editing team for my clients, that was a magic sauce that alleviated all the overwhelm most people feel, and at the same time, tell their story better than they could.
Absolutely. Listen, writing a book is tough. And I'm going to tell people that right out the gate. And my story is really interesting of how I fell into writing a book. It was a total accident. I was doing a big launch and I had this vision for my team. I said, I want to give away the best PDF free report, right? So when you do a product launch, people opt in pre-launch, you give away a free PDF or whatever. That's a free report, right? And I was like, no, I want to write something so insane, that's so epic. And funny enough, you mentioned Robert Kiyosaki. That launch was the first one that Robert Kiyosaki was supporting. He was promoting that launch. So I was like, this is to be the biggest thing. My mentor, the person, the first book I ever read was Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And I was like, he's promoting me. Like, this has got to be the best thing. So it was such a big plan. I wrote this amazing outline that I just didn't write it. And I'm thinking this will be 30 pages, you know, 40 pages. But here's the interesting thing. What I never connected was the outline itself was like 30 pages. Like, stupid me, thinking the book will be, or the report will be 30, 40 pages. The outline was like 30 pages. And so I remember, I'm never going to forget this moment. I am in India. I am visiting, like my wife is from that area. So we're visiting family. And we used to stay in this hotel and they had an amazing, I love this hotel's like business lounge. I would just go hang out there. It was a really nice lounge. And I am entering the lounge and my head of operations messages me and she says, listen, this launch is the biggest thing we've ever done. It's going to do probably 10 million or more. Nice. Your free report needs to be in my inbox within the next 5 to 6 days. If we have any chance of getting this thing formatted and turned around for the launch, which by the way, starts in exactly 3 weeks. And I was like, oh, what? I remember I had a total panic attack. But then, you know, some of us, we work really well under pressure. So I remember clearing my schedule. I actually got special permission for that lounge to be open for me 24/7 from the hotel. I was like, I need to be in this lounge. I told my wife, like, I am dead to everybody. I'm just going to, I sat in that lounge probably 18 to 19 hours a day. And I wrote for 5 days straight and I never looked back. I just kept pouring my heart out and just writing and writing and writing. And 5 or 6 days in, completely unformatted, completely unedited, I sent it to my team and I said, guys, I'm done. And I remember the message I got back. It was from Meredith. It's exactly the email she sent back. She wrote some explicitives. She wrote, son of a, this is not a report. This is a damn book. And I was like, I wrote a book. Like, there we go. That's my first book. I was like, how about that? How about a product launch where the free giveaway for the pre-launch is a book, not a free report, which actually, by the way, happened to turn out to be one of the biggest moments of my entire career, because everything we do now, every webinar funnel we do, every launch we do, we give away a free book, not a free report. So if you're listening, by the way. But having said that, those are marketing books. They're written really quickly. They're not like legacy books, not the kinds that Doug and I are talking about today. So that turned out, and then turns out Robert Kiyosaki agreed to write the foreword to it. So I'm blessed enough that the first book I ever accidentally wrote had Robert Kiyosaki write the foreword to it, which was so awesome. The book that I intently wrote was Escape, and I have nightmares about the process. I have PTSD from writing it. It was so hard. Yeah. It's a great book, epic book. I remember listening to Tony Robbins once. People were like, why don't you write more books? And Tony's like, do you know how damn hard it is to write a book? Who's got time for that? And I was like, Tony Robbins, think about it. When's the last, like, Tony Robbins doesn't write that many books. So having said all of that, everybody, writing a book is hard. So now let's talk about the real question. Doug, what, why, like, should someone write a book? If they're listening, let me just point blank ask you, should they write a book?
The right answer is depends, of course, because I'm a salesperson. It depends on who you are and what you want to get out of it. I always ask this two questions to my clients. What do you want to say that hasn't already been said? Oh. And it always gets them like, oh crap, nothing. Like, okay, that's fine. I'll get back in a second. And then who's your audience really? And they start talking like, oh, everybody, you know, marketing fail 101. We're not going to talk to everybody because nobody goes to Google and says, you know, teach me something, right? They're going to be very specific. So give me an avatar. And I learned from Frank Kern. He actually talked about designing the avatar down to the shoes they wear and their kids' names. I mean, it's ultra specific. So I asked my clients, if you could sell your book to one person, who are they and why would they bother reading your stuff? And that kind of goes hand in hand with the first question, right? If there's a real problem you're going to solve, it could just be entertainment, right? Maybe they're bored. But if there's a serious problem you can solve for them and you've got a story to back it up, great. So those are the two powerful questions we ask them. You know, should everybody write the book? Absolutely not. Because not everybody can write. Most of us can write a blog post or a social media post easy. But to weave a compelling story that holds someone's attention for 4, 5, 6 hours. I mean, Hollywood spends hundreds of millions of dollars and a crew of hundreds of people to visually hold your attention for 2 hours. And they fail quite often. Imagine using just words for that and holding it for 6 hours. I mean, you don't have to be J.K. Rowling or, you know, James Patterson, but you better have some good fundamentals of story arcs, nemesis, heroes, tension, things like that to keep people interested in order to consume whatever you're going to tell them. And that's not easy in a nonfiction world. I mean, here we have, I got a merger and acquisition story for you, dog. Here I was at the boardroom and somebody yelled at me. I'm like, okay, what else you got? You know, so we don't embellish, but we have to go dig deeper into like, tell me the conflict, you know, who are you up against? Tell me what was at stake here and try to build some intrigue with it. So not everybody should write, but most everybody should publish.
That's interesting. Wait, what does that mean? Dig deeper into that and I'll come back and ask you some other questions. You just said not everyone should write, but everybody should publish. What is that?
I'll ask you a couple questions. Like, you know your parents, right?
Yep.
Grandparents?
Not really. Not that well. I know one grandfather kind of well, but not really.
Great grandparents?
Not at all.
You know a name where they lived or anything?
I mean, I know where they lived. I don't know. I wouldn't even know their names. No, I was so far.
So here's the chilling thing. Someday that's going to be you.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew it. All right.
All the social media posts that we see now, that's vapor, man. That's gone. This podcast, gone. After somebody watches this, they're never going to go back to again. Or you and I might, but they're never. And the notes might be good, but the legacy of a book is forever. We've discarded, I don't remember the last post I liked, the last blog I commented on. I don't remember the last thing I watched on TV, radio, or even a speech. I couldn't give it to you verbatim. I don't think there's like libraries full of emails, right? There's libraries of books because books are forever. So when you publish a legacy story, a memoir, even somebody you do want to teach somebody, you take it very seriously because it'll be around forever after you're gone. And that's the power of a book and also, of course, the danger. So everybody should publish something about themselves in a physical form and digital too, of course. But should they actually write themselves? From what I've read, no.
Oh, no. Heck, dude. Can I just say, like, I'm just going to be upfront and honest with everybody listening right now. Like, unless you enjoy writing, like thoroughly enjoy writing, like that's what my PTSD is from, man. Sitting at that computer 3 hours a day. And remember, if anyone knows me, they know that my English, my first D minus was in my English writing class, 11th grade. That was my first ever, I had to write a report on Pride and Prejudice. I have not been able to touch, the words Pride and Prejudice immediately echo massive PTSD for me because I tried to do my usual nonsense stuff and my teacher was like, what is this rubbish? She was a PhD in English literature. And I drove her crazy for months. I'd go into every recess, lunchtime, try to get extra help. And one time I remember she looked at me and she said, do me a favor. She looked just like this. She went like this. She said, do me a favor. Don't ever write for a living. And like, can you imagine how frustrated? And you know, I was pretty upset with her because I was pretty offended. But at that time I was like, I was going to be a doctor. So I was like, whatever. You know, the only thing I'm going to write is a prescription. So whatever, you know. And the irony of the fact that I write for a living, and I've always wanted to go back to her and just be like, haha, but She was right. I mean, honestly, I deserved what she said. So, but I don't write a lot of my own stuff. I write copy, kind of, but that's different. And that's a skill that has helped me write better books. I will tell you that, because you said keeping attention, right? I think a lot of, so we're going to talk a little bit about that, because not everyone was going to be able to afford Doug a service like yours, but there's got to be other solutions. But I completely agree with you. To everyone who's listening right now, so what this is a point we're trying to make. It's like you need to write a book. You need to have a book published. I should reword what Doug said. Here's a story, Doug, that I think you're gonna get a complete laugh out of, and I think you'll be able to use it in your future. So my family knows me to be pretty successful. You know, I don't go around tooting my horn, but people, they know my nephews and nieces have asked me to come into their school and talk and do all that fun stuff. It's really an honor. I love it. So we built this house, beautiful house. This house to me was like, when I do the housewarming, I want my family to come over and I want them to be like, wow, like Anik just, man, this house is amazing. Like Anik made it. Anik is something, you know. So we do the housewarming. My family comes from all over the country. They're walking through the house. They're looking like, oh, this is cool. Like, nice job. Like, okay. And I'm like, damn, this is not satisfying at all. Like, I really
want to.
I've
seen the outside pictures of your house, man. It's a mansion.
Yeah. I'm like, dude, my house is automated. Like, shit works on its own. Like, you know, there's like, it's run off of computers. Like, my toilets literally detect you're coming up to them and open up and warm the seats for you. Like, seriously, this house is automated. All right. My one cousin walks into my home office, and at that time, our interior decorator had taken the few of the books I had written. She had taken the cover, ripped it off, and framed it really nicely and put it up high. It was like up high on top of our TV cabinet in my office. And my cousin, I'm in the room, and my cousin's looking, and she's like, what's that? And I'm like, oh, it's my book framed. She's like, what do you mean, your book? Why's your name on it? I'm like, that's my book. I wrote it. And she's like, she literally, I'll never forget the look on her face. She turns and she goes, you wrote a book? And I'm like, yeah. She goes, that's your book. You're an author? And I'm like, yeah. She starts screaming. She's like calling her kids and she's calling her husband. She's like, you gotta come in here and check this out. Anik wrote a book. And the whole, everyone family's like, you wrote a book. Can I get a copy? Oh my God, you're an author? And the whole time I'm like, man, I wrote that thing in a lounge in a hotel in India, and that is impressing you? My entire house, this multi-million dollar house I built, doesn't matter. And I just want to share the story with everybody, because there is this credibility you carry, right, as an author. But so there's two aspects to writing a book, and I want to get into these with you, Doug. Aspect one is the credibility. You touched on it a little bit, and we're going to dive deeper, where you said, hey, you know, you want to have an exit, you want to be on boards, you want to be important in a room, nothing better than a book. You were talking about that before we recorded the podcast. And the number two reason to write a book is something new, which you've brought into my life, which is like this legacy concept, right? You're right. I'm not going to be around, but like, I would love my great grandkids and great, 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 great grandkids to be like, hey, this is like how our someone from our family thought, like these are lessons passed down their generations. So let's talk a little bit about, give me a couple, like tell me a story of some executive, you don't have to use their name, but like someone who you worked with and how the book impacted their life. Let's go a little off course. So someone who's right now thinking and they're like, I don't really need to write a book. I want their mind. I want to change their mind. I want them to be interested in publishing a book.
I'm going to give you a couple of short ones because they're different demographics and financial wherewithal here. So probably one of our most famous guys. He's a immigrant from India. And he gave me his outline, Anik, for his book. I want to write a book. Okay, look at your outline. And it was 30 pages long. And I'm reading his resume. I'm like, okay, so you immigrated here. You worked at NASA, JPL, CIA, NSA. You invented GPS, became a doctor, got dropped out of med school, became an attorney, founded stamps.com, did a couple of IPOs. He's like, and he's met like, you know, Indira Gandhi's kids. He hung out with Bobby Kennedy. He's like, are you Forrest Gump or what?
Yeah.
The man invented GPS and no one knows his name. I'm like, we need to publish your book.
Yeah. Wow.
Publish his book. Got him a speaking gig at Oxford, NYU. He's on his way to like, you know, hey, now this is a real guy. He's actually done some things that have actually changed the world. So that's the 30,000 foot view. Now he might not have, you know, met an assassinated presidential candidate, but maybe you're a coach or a consultant, or you've had a life story And this goes back to my first point of what can you say that hasn't already been said? And there's nothing out there except one thing, and that's your experience, your perspective on life or liberty and pursuit of happiness, right? So even if somebody has I've had a lot of people who have, oh, no one wants to hear about me. And they start talking about what they've done. I'm like, holy crap, I want to hear more about that. And if I do, I'm sure another 10 or 50,000 people want to. So there's always a story that needs to be told and memorialized. So the legacy piece is one thing, but if you can get the trifecta of, you know, a legacy piece and teach them something that's valuable and usable and entertain them a little bit, it's going to work. Most people just focus on one of those things, but the trifecta is getting all those things into your book. It'll work, right? It'll work as long as you got some marketing power behind it, of course. But the other story I love is one of the people we work with who came to me. He had already written his book, but he needed some advice on, you know, getting it out there and whatnot. And he's a former PJ, you know, air rescue guy, started a restaurant coaching business. And he's talking to me about his book and it had some really lame ass title. But he kept saying, oh, this guy's restaurant sucked. This guy's restaurant sucked. I said, that's the title of your book. What? Your restaurant sucks. Call him out. Be a little edgy about that. And he was doing about 3 to 4 speaking gigs a year. His book came out, 60 speaking gigs first year. 60.
Wow.
He still does not have a VA. It's just him. And he's pushing a solid 7 figures out of his business every single year with no support.
So when you say his book came out, are you helping them get published, self-published?
Let's go down this rabbit hole. Okay.
Yeah. Let's go down it.
It's not 1982 anymore. I'm going to help people understand that self-publishing in many ways is much better than a traditional New York publisher. There's a reason 90% of those guys are out of business now. And it's because they were not being very honorable, right? I don't know if you've ever seen those contracts, but they, you know, give me your IP, give me all your rights, past, present, future, and everything related to this topic forever is what the contracts always start with. If they grace you with their good graces of saying, I'm going to publish your book. So ask yourself, what does the word publishing mean nowadays? Does it mean being in Barnes & Noble? I don't care because no one goes in there. Does it mean being in an airport? Maybe. That's good. Does it mean getting it in a physical format on Amazon for starters or for finishers? Yeah. So you and I could here, hate to use an example. You and I could publish a book from this podcast. We could put the transcription up, send it to Amazon, and you and I, we could make it a bestseller tomorrow, right? It's that easy. And because it's so easy, it's also bad because there's approximately 2 million new books every year.
Wow.
And it's an ocean of noise out there. So to stand out, we got to go, you know, niche, you know, don't compete with Tony Robbins, all right? Stop that. Go ahead. And if you want to do a life self-development book, do it for, you know, left-handed 40-year-old women in Arkansas, you know, do it, pick a niche and go for that. You could own it. We both know David Fry, right? You know, David.
Yeah.
I had his original program, Coaches and Consultants Marketing Bootcamp, on cassette tapes. And he tells a story about how he's talking to his neighbor about his business. Oh, I'm a pool and spa distributor. And David's chatting with him, of course, being the nice guy he is. And he went back and rewrote his book and took out the word entrepreneur and put in pool and spa distributor. And 1 year later, he's a keynote speaker at the pool and spa convention. So don't write a book. I'm going off a tangent here, but it's important. Don't think you're going to be, I'm going to like talk about something like The Secret or something broad-based. Because you will lose. Always go narrow, 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 narrow. You can always silo it out and do a second niche at any time you want.
Yeah. I heard this on the Ed Milet podcast and it was interesting. He said, your best customer is who you used to be. Yeah. And I was like, whoa, it really hit home for me, right? He had a particular guest on, I'm forgetting his name, it's skipping my mind, but the guest was all about personal brand and why it's important. And it was an interesting transitional time for me. This was like pre-expert summit that you came to. And I was, you know, kind of transition from like the guy who teaches the world how to start an online business to like the guy who doesn't really even believe that anymore now. Like after having been through it, I'm like, yeah, I want to work with more tenured entrepreneurs. And he on this podcast, he said, you know, what's the one word that describes you, your market, your mission? Like, what's the word you get to own, so that when someone hears that word, they think, and I was at the gym, like, I'm like, oh my God, I stopped working out. I think I go sat in the corner for a little while having like a protein smoothie because I was like, this is gonna kill me. Like, what is it? And the two words, actually, they came down to two, and I'm still struggling with which ones, but I've been using both, which is expert and scale. Those are the two words that for me have just been like, I mean, I know how to do that. I know that market.
Yeah, there's one more thing here. As long as you're going with the Anik Singhal show and more of a personal brand, there's one thing you have that nobody else has out there. And we know a lot of the people. I mentioned David for a reason. We know him, like him, and trust him. But we also know there's a bunch of people out there that we wouldn't want to have dinner with. Huh? And you've got charisma, gravitas, that ability to look at a room and look at everybody in the eye like he's talking to me. And that's a very unique talent that I'm not sure. There's no one word for that, right? But that is part of who you are and why you are my the bromance exists here. You know, it's like you're just a charismatic guy that I want to hang out with, and you know, it's part of that brand. So keep that in mind. It's just my
well, it's really interesting you mentioned that. So first of all, thank you. That's very sweet of you. But the one, I think I remember one thing, which was like, so when I was going through this exercise, I'm like, yeah, I love expert. I love scale. I'm having a ton of fun with that market right now, but that's not a mass market. That's not like a, right? So right now we have these big plans we're putting together with my social media and expanding in India, which I didn't realize there's a huge brand for me in India. I didn't even know that. And I'm sitting on it already. It's already built. I went out there recently and almost didn't want to come back. I mean, if it wasn't for my daughter and my wife being here, I was like, we're just going to stay here. It was that energizing for me. But so I do think, I'm like, God, there is some message inside of me that I want to reach to the masses with. And I don't know exactly what it is, to be honest. Because when you said, what do you want to say that's not already being said? I'm like, I don't know. But what's really interesting, Doug, is when you were explaining, I mean, I didn't invent the GPS. That's pretty freaking cool. But when I tell my stories, usually people are like, what the heck? Like I've made a movie that's, I'm on IMDb as a producer and actor. I've hung out with some of the biggest movie stars in the world. I've networked with, and I have some crazy stories. I almost died on an airplane. If the airplane had taken off, I would be dead. You know, I've been stranded in countries and hospitals. It's like, I have all these crazy stories. And so, but I think this is where having someone else, like, this is why I was saying in the beginning, I'm like, I'm pretty much convinced I'm just going to work with you and Jen in the near future, because I don't know what to do with all that, right? Like, I don't know how to put that together and create something. Like, I need guidance on that, because I have all this knowledge and I can influence and impact, but it's like, what is that one message? How do you help? Let's get into that a little bit, because I'm going to get into how to get other people. Yeah. I think most people right now are so daunted probably by that. What do you want to say that's not already been said? That scared the shit out of me when you said that. Yeah. So how do you help someone navigate that? Like, if someone comes to you, do you help them find the answer to that, or should they already have an answer to that?
All I do.
Okay.
I've got a team that does all the writing and production and publishing and marketing. I'm the therapist that pulls out your golden nuggets out of all your head trash and says, this is who you are. This is what people want to hear. And this is why you can, and how you can monetize and make the world a better place. And making the world a better place, Anik, I'm so glad you talk about going, because you're at the level now where you can actually do that. Most people can't, but, and it's okay to do this, to go, you know, mass market. There's a lot of people that approach me to do their book. And just the last one, it was so hard for me because he had an amazing story. He was like the youngest double agent for Cuba and the CIA, and a great story. And I asked him a question like, well, who does this book serve? And he stuttered. And, you know, it's for business stuff, you know, like, and he had a massive budget, six-figure budget. Here you go, Doug. Here's a bunch of money. Make me get the book out. And I turned it down because of what my previous coach told me. He's listening to my sales call, said, you know, you're talking to this one guy and you're all enthused, excited, you're gelling ideas. And the second guy I heard you talk to, you're kind of bored. What was that about? It's an ego book. It's all about him. I just didn't really care. And he said, why did you talk to him then? I'm a business. I got to talk to everybody. No, you don't. I said, if I stop talking to people, your business will go up. I said, it's 30% of my audience. I said, ah, just stop talking to them. So we made a decision a couple of years ago to only do books and platforms for people who want to make a difference in the world. Whatever that is, financial, spiritual, doesn't matter. And the moment I did that, my business doubled in 1 year.
Wow.
So to get someone from point A to Z, I got to start, where are they in point A? Do they have the confidence to get out there and speak? Most of them do. Some don't. Like, you don't have to speak. You could be an author who's, you know, my gosh, Victoria Steele, nobody knows who she really is. She's one of the best-selling authors of all time, but she's never done a single interview ever. So you can publish, you can become an author, but the most important question after the first one, what can you say hasn't already said, is why do you want to publish? Why do you want to publish? What's in it for you personally, professionally, spiritually, even? What do you want to get out of it? And there's nothing wrong with saying money or fame, as long as you know why. So yeah. Why is a really good one, you know? A little Simon Sinek here. Start with why.
Yeah, so it's almost like working backwards. So when I said, hey, what do you want to say and what that's already been said, you kind of reneged and said, well, first, we need to know who your audience is and why that's your audience.
You can't answer that question effectively. We've got to go circle back, and we'll come back to it. It usually ends up on perspective and life story. Your life story is great as long as you can connect those with something that's in it for the reader. If it's just how cool you are, I'm sorry, not interesting. There's a lot of cool people out there, cooler than us. Yeah. But if my cool experiences relate to, here's what I've learned from it, here's what you can learn from it, how can you help them, save them time and money?
Yeah.
You know, everything is sex and politics, time and money. It's just simple.
Yeah, it's funny. I really would love to dive into that one day because I don't know. I will tell you one thing I find myself fascinated by, and I wonder if there's a book around this concept, is how quickly people give up and how the struggle is actually just a part of the process. So most people don't know about me is how I've been on my deathbed, how I've nearly died multiple times, I've been nearly bankrupt multiple times, I've dealt with some of the biggest challenges. Heck, I'm dealing with some right now. I'm in the middle of them right now, and you would never know. And I actually rejoice when these happen because they're very cathartic. It's like you shed new skin and you grow. And almost always in my life, it's been like this. I'm growing, hit a challenge, fall. And when I climb back, which I innately always do, I'm double of where I was before. And then I have another big issue, and then I climb all the way back, and I'm double of where I was before. And so for me, I look at challenges and obstacles as like, hey, why are you worried about this? Like, this is great. This is an opportunity for you to grow and improve yourself and adapt. And the reason you're facing this challenge is because there's something out of alignment. You need to adapt your life so that you don't fail.
Right.
And it's just I've had a struggle to explain that to people because I'll have students all the time that just quit. And I'm like, why'd you quit? Well, it didn't work. And the concept to me just doesn't make sense. I'm like, so what? Yeah, like, what do you mean it didn't work? You tried once.
I've had people pay in full for a book and quit on it.
Oh, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. Yeah.
I'm shocked. And these are people, I mean, of means, and you know, it's an expensive thing. I don't get it. So I think the quitting thing is important. And I would ask you one question. You've had all these rises and falls, and it rises double after you fall. Do you remember the first one?
I remember the first two very innately. The first one, I was in the ICU. I mean, we were about to go bankrupt. I pulled off a product launch using a BlackBerry phone from the ICU of a hospital. Because I was like, again, and there was a chance I was going to die. I mean, but I was like, I ain't dead yet. So I'm not going to go bankrupt while I'm alive. Then the
your attitude was, still in the gratitude and blessings of that?
100%. Yes, 100%. So I had this experience where I was in the hospital for 3.5 months. I was in the ICU for like 2.5 of it. And I went through a surgery where the doctors kind of said 50-50 if this guy makes it or not. I was in bad state. I was, I was lying flat. If they lifted me up, like sat me up, my heart rate would spike to 180. I was losing 2 to 3 pints of blood a day. So they were replacing my blood every day. I was in a bad state till a surgeon finally said, we got to go in. There's no way to not do this. And the surgery, I was in such a weak spot, you know. So it ended up being about a 10-hour surgery. And the surgeon, my sister, I remember she's rushing in to meet me because she used to be in an island school. I almost didn't make it, but like we're holding on. Like they wheel me in. And I actually remember going into the surgical room. This is a really funny, I thought it was funny. The nurses and doctors didn't find it funny. But when they like pick you up and move you to like the steel thing that they're doing surgery on, I remember they're like, you good? And I remember like kind of moseying around and I was like, hey, this is pretty comfortable. I don't know why people say the deathbed sucks. And they were like, dude, you cannot like, no, like you can't say that. Like take that back. Like you're going to be fine. And I'm like, I'm just joking, relax. But I remember, obviously I woke up from that and it was I had to relearn to walk again. I had lost my legs because I had been flat for 2 months. So my legs, my muscles completely deteriorated. And I remember when I'm leaving the hospital, right? And the head nurse, she's like an older nurse. She comes into the room the day I'm leaving and she's like, I just wanted to talk to you real quick. And I'm like, yeah. She's like, I just want you to know something. Of all the patients I've ever dealt with, she's like, you are not alive because of the doctors or because of the nurses. You should be dead. You should be dead.
Or your body.
Yeah. No, she was like, because I used to play pranks on the nurses. I used to be laughing. I remember one of the biggest issues we had was I kept using my BlackBerry in the ICU and I would hide and because I wanted to work. And they were like, you can't have a phone. So I negotiated with the administrative staff and I said, fine, there's a computer in this room that the nurses use. Give me 3 hours a day on the computer and I won't use my phone. But like, I got to work. Like, I'm not going to lay here and just die, you know? And so she was just like, so there was like the head administrative person came down fighting with us. And, you know, I'd have my employees sneak in new phones when they took away my phone. Like it was like I was fighting to live, like literally, right? And so I've always found that to be, and people always ask me like, where'd you find it in you to do that? And I'm like, I honestly don't know any other way. Like I don't know
and
how.
And that's the question, nature versus nurture now. I mean, it's innate in you. I can tell you my life where I got it from because when the big crash came and people talk about their foreclosure, I'm like, I had 19 foreclosures for bankruptcy in 2008. So I, you know, depression, you know, it was serious. I was like contemplating suicide. It was really, really bad. So, but the epiphany comes if you're still breathing. For some people, it doesn't. They stay languishing in their, you know, wallowing in their misery. And I'm not sure if there's savable. I don't know. Because there's so many inspirational stories out there. What's is there a secret sauce to taking someone who's like had 10 years of crap in their life and saying, oh, I'm gonna be okay now? I mean, we've all read these books. I got clients who've been abused and had their, you know, friends or parents murdered and they rise above it, but not everybody does. So what's the differentiator between the person who rises above and survives and thrives like you and me and someone who just gives up and, you know, dies or worse?
Yeah, I don't know. I think for me, I'll tell you, I remember being in that hospital bed and you know, my team, I had one of my key, I only had like two people on my team and one of them who was local would come see me every now and then seek me my BlackBerry phones. This is before iPhones, by the way, guys. So this is why BlackBerry was what I was using. He asked me once, he was like, dude, just stop. Like, why are you doing this? Like, why are you still like, don't worry about it. I'll be fine. I'll go get another job. Like, just shut it down. Like, just focus on you, focus on your health. Why are you still trying to get this product launch done? And why are you still trying to do this? And I remember thinking about my answer. It wasn't for the money. Cause like, I wasn't really doing it for the money. I just told him, I'm like, well, what the hell else am I supposed to do? Like, well, I was basically like, sit here and die. Like, I'm like, I'm enjoying the journey. And I remember telling him, I was like, who else can say they've run a product launch out of an ICU using a BlackBerry? That'll be a story I can tell for the rest of my life. You know, I'm like, it'll be something like, you know, when my daughter's complaining about something she doesn't want to do, I'll be like, your dad ran a product launch using a BlackBerry out of an ICU. What's your excuse? And why I made the movie. It was a lot of work. It was a lot of expense. It was a lot of risk. We did stuff without licenses in a country where you can disappear. Why did I do it? Because it's one of the coolest stories. I'm the only person I know in my circle who made a movie, right? Who's James Bond, actually shot a car that blew up, kind of. But that's interesting. So I'm sorry, we're going on a tangent.
Yeah, it's okay. No, but it's important to do that. And like, yeah, there's people are still, they still need inspiration. They still need to hear from you because they didn't resonate with somebody else. That's the answer to the question of what can you say hasn't already been said? It's your perspective, your story. This can make a difference in the lives of somebody.
So can I tell you, because you said, who's your audience? And so what do you think about this? I'm struggling with this, but I'm going to come out and say it. So, but I think this is what every author probably struggles with, because when you start to get, you start to put those like, well, I'm going to go after this audience. You're like, but what about all these people? And I want these people. So right now, I was in India and I experienced something I've never experienced before. I mean, I experienced my car pulling into, it's a 5,000 person event. It was one of the keynotes. And I experienced my car pulling in second day when I'm about to speak an hour from then, and my car being surrounded and chased. I was chased. I felt like freaking Tom Cruise. I mean, people were chasing my car. When I got out of the car, there was security to take me in. When I walked in, they walked me in from the front of the event. There was a speaker on stage that was going on. The event stopped. And they were like, ladies and gentlemen, Onyx Singhal has entered the building. 5,000 people erupted in applause and stood up. And I was like, what is going on? I was completely dumbfounded. And the next day, I had interviews lined up on podcasts. People were lined up left and right. I hosted a dinner where it was a VIPs only dinner, and people came from all over the country, flew in for the dinner just to meet me. I'm just stunned by what's happening. And one of the podcasts, just one of the things they asked me is like, hey, can you do this pod? Can you do a talk and podcast in Hindi, the local language? I was like, man, I'm fluent in the language, but I've never done a talk in it. That is nerve wracking. And I've never done a podcast in it. But I was like, whatever, let's do it. So I did it. And that caught on. I ended up doing like 7-8 podcasts. One of the main podcasters told me about another guy whose name is Ankur Variku, who is in India, 42 years old. I'm 39. And he took off during COVID. And his target audience is 20 to 30 year olds. And he teaches personal finance in Hindi. He's got 3 million followers on YouTube. He's written 2 best-selling books. He's built a business doing about $8 to $10 million a year in India, which is massive, really. And this guy is one of the biggest YouTube channels in India. He's interviewing me and he looks at me and he goes, you are the Ankur Variku of like success and just like entrepreneurship, success, and personal development. He does personal finance. You are the personal development guy. He's like, your experiences that you've had being in a foreign market and being able to eloquently put that in Hindi, he's like, nobody in this entire country of 1.5 billion people has that. And he's like, you are going to explode in this country. So actually, in 2 days, we have a meeting with what is my initial team in India for my expansion into India. And I'm wondering, when you say, who's your audience, dare I say, Indians in the 20s and 30s looking for success?
That could be the next. Listen, there's more than one book in you.
Okay.
I don't know if I've mentioned, I was over there also in October at a very big event. Yeah. It was a big crowd for a big pilgrimage crowd. Okay. And we had security guards, helping us get through the onslaught of people. So they're very passionate about stuff. And being the guy with the heritage, but also made it in foreign country, that's huge. I had a client in Israel who came here not speaking any English, did a book, had Les Brown write the foreword, went back to Israel, and same thing. There were people at the airport waiting for him. It was a big deal. So we have about 15% of our clients are Indian heritage, and I love the country. I love the volume. Yeah, you can do a nice 7-8 figure thing just on that one.
Oh, in India. So I was laughing because we did that dinner for influencers, right? And the joke I had was like, if you walked in and had 100,000 followers on your YouTube, it was like someone would be like, pat you on the back and be like, oh, it's okay. You'll make it one day. Don't worry. Like, it's like a joke over there because you got 1.5 billion people that are using YouTube. So, okay, that's another interesting concept you brought up. So like, the way to get an author around their scarcity or fear of limiting their audience or a book for an audience is to tell them and remind them there's more than one book inside of you.
Oh, for sure. I haven't spoken to anybody that doesn't have 5 books in them. So just one at a time. Low-hanging fruit. Go with the Indian one first is my advice based on what you're saying here. Get that one cranked out and then just do another version in Spanish or French or English, whatever you want to do. I mean, you can.
Well, here, you want to know something crazy? So in India, books are in English. They'll read and write in English. They want to hear in Hindi. So it's the craziest thing. So a podcast, like this guy, Uncle Varuk, who I talked about, I've been like dissecting his channel. His titles are in English. His descriptions are in English. He speaks in Hindi in the actual episode, which is mind-blowing to me. But that's interesting. So I kind of turned this into a very selfish episode and started talking about myself. But I'm hoping that in that process, you guys are kind of seeing the journey that Doug and I are going on and how this journey you could go on. There are so many people in this country, in the United States. We are such a cocktail of religions and experience and cultures that imagine what you know and what group you could share that with. It's just pick that group and make your story unique. I love that. And it's given me ideas, which is like, for example, one of the books I'm writing right now, Doug, is actually I'm expecting like draft one to be done prior to the event. And draft one's going to suck, so I'm not going to show it to you prior to our mastermind that you're coming to. But it's called 17 Laws of Scale. It's the target market for that book is probably a couple hundred thousand people, 300,000 people worldwide. It's for information marketers and coaches that it's showing them how to scale their business. But it's a great book. Like I was going over my concepts and I was like, damn, that's good. Like this is not stuff you will learn from anyone else. I've been through it so I could teach it. But I love the fact that you've got me now thinking, I'm like, man, all these different markets, like different book for different markets. And collectively I can build the Onyx and Gall brand. And that's a really unique way to approach it.
And repurpose that content, right? The book takes the longest amount of time and effort and is only $15. But you take that same content, repurpose it, Kindle, video, audiobooks. Oh my gosh, double digit growth rate to audiobooks. If you produce a book and don't do an audiobook, you are walking over a lot of money. Make sure it's an audio version. And you can create a course on your book, you know, with a video thing in an afternoon and charge a grand for that. So the less time it takes, the more you make. And you're repurposing the same content, you know, all this stuff but a book, yeah. But the book can be like the anchor for it because it's published. It has more credibility than getting the phone and talking to somebody because you took the time to craft it.
Well, listen, at this event of 5,000 people, so here's a really interesting story. I shook so many hands, met so many people. I don't remember most of their names. Two of them took the time to hand me a book. One of them turns out to be one of our students. He's making 60, 70 grand a month now, which is epic in India. He went through a lot of challenges. In India, you have this whole cultural challenge of your parents not wanting you to be an entrepreneur, get a job, blah, blah, blah.
An engineer, a doctor. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, right. And he faced all of that. And he said he watched all my videos, all my webinars. I encouraged him. I motivated him. He's making all this money. So he has a book that he wrote. And he wrote a hand note in the book, first page for me, and put a sticky in chapter, I think 6 or 7, where he talks about me, hands me the book, says, please read my note I've put for you. And please, if you get a chance, read this book. This book was inspired and written because of what you taught me. I'm like, okay, I take the book, take it back to my hotel, put it down. Another person whose name I don't remember, but hands me a book, something, he's got a really unique WhatsApp marketing strategy. WhatsApp is huge in India, by the way. It's like people build WhatsApp funnels instead of like, you know, web page funnels. I came back from India after speaking to 5,000 people. I was unpacking my bag the other day, pulled out 2 books. So 5,000 people, 2 people took the opportunity to hand me a book, only 2 people. And those 2 books have made it back. They are on my bookshelf. And I read the note and I skimmed through one of those books. And that person and I have a follow-up call next week. We're actually talking about one of his expertise, which I'm really curious about because he's taking something I do and taking it to the next level. And I'm like, dude, I want to learn this, especially as I enter the US and India market. The other person, guess what? I still remember what he does. He does WhatsApp marketing. I don't remember what any of the other 4,998 people I shook hands with do. So to you, to those who are thinking about book, as someone else had said it once, and I agree, it's the best business card you're ever going to have.
Absolutely. We've thrown away every business card we've ever gotten. I've never put a book in the garbage can.
You can't. It's subconscious. Like Well, I have a 9-month-old at home, and since she was 1 or 2 months, since she was born, we read to her, and she just knows the importance of books. Books are important. That's her sacred time. We read a book. So since we're kids, we're taught books are holy. Like they are. they are important. And you're 100% right, dude. I don't remember the last time I threw a book away. Like, so we have a bunch of my books right now that are, they're the second edition of a book. I've already written the third edition. We have like 2,000 or 3,000 copies sitting in a warehouse. And I just got asked if they could be removed because we're paying a bunch of money per month to store them. And I'm literally telling my team, I'm like, I can't throw away.
Donate them. Donate them. Take the tax write-off, Anik.
So where do I donate them?
Donate them and take the tax write-off.
But where? Like, where do I go donate them?
Entrepreneurial schools. Okay. Wharton. I don't know. There's a bunch of.
All right. I'll figure. Yeah. I'll figure out somewhere. 100%. I gave him the order. I said, don't throw them away yet. I'll figure out something to do.
Don't shred them. I had a friend who worked at a warehouse for Bantam Doubleday. It was like Indiana Jones, big ass warehouse. And his job was to shred books by the container. Because they don't if they don't sell at the bookstore in 6 weeks, they go back and get shredded. It's horrible. It's like, ugh, it's nasty.
Oh God, that's painful. Ouch.
Yeah, I went there. I just got a bunch of kids' books for myself and took them home. So we're going to the shredder.
So for everyone listening right now, this is pretty interesting. Like there's giving you a lot of reasons why you should consider publishing a book. Notice the word publishing, not writing. So, Doug, I'm sure you guys charge a ton, as you should. What about the common person who maybe doesn't have these huge multi four-figure, five-figure budgets? What do you suggest to them about getting a book written?
Yeah, you could do it. What you should still go ahead and write. There's three methods that I found to be very helpful. My first book, I did what you did. I sequestered myself for 5 days, banged it out, and was embarrassed to publish it. The second one, I'm like, okay, somebody told me just record it. So I put down 7 chapters, about 1 chapter on a piece of paper with 3 bullet points, taped them on a wall, got a recorder out and talked the book out, gave it to an editor, still sucked. The third method, the one that we use is, and you can use a professional or even amateur, is have someone interview you. We use a professional journalist to actually ask questions of the author that the reader wants to know. Because most people who write, here's my story, it sounds like a diary, how cool I am, blah, blah, blah. But they usually gloss over things that I want to know, like who was in the room? Why did you say that? What happened? What's your background? And people, they skip over all these important elements because they're too close to the content. A journalist is removed from that. When I get my clients on a call to interview them, I rarely read their bio. Like, aren't you going to research me? I'm like, nope. I don't want to skip over anything. I want to learn firsthand during conversations about your struggles, your pain, your parents, everything. So I can frame up your personality and make this book sound better than you.
Mm. Wow. So hire someone to interview. That's really interesting. Is that something you can find on like a freelance website or how does a common person?
We have staff journalists and staff writers at our company, but you could probably put something like that out on, you know, Upwork or Fiverr or something, but, or anybody, you know, I would, you know, not to be sexist about, but anybody, who's really curious, maybe female that likes to talk, you know, would be good to interview you. I mean,
yeah, no. So first of all, I'm going to go ahead and promote this for him before he even gets a chance. Guys, if you have even 5% of you that says, hey, I want to do this and you want to just have a professional, here's what I have found in my life. I have genuinely found this more and more. And I think over the last year or 2 years, I have been really devoted to it. That is, find the best at what you're trying to do. Pay them what they deserve and get the hell out of their way. That has been the mantra of my growth over the last. So authoryourbrand.com is where you can go to learn more about Doug and their services. But specifically, if you want him to run a free analysis on your idea or your thoughts, go to authoryourbrand.com/go. And they've got a service where, like, and I would highly encourage you, don't cheap out on this because this is going to stick around past you. And so you're going to cheap out on something that's going to be like, for me, the next books I write, they're just, I'm taking so much more intention behind them. And yet I still don't feel like I'm doing enough. Like after talking to Doug, I'm like, okay, I got to do better. Because it, you know, petrol.
Help me out, man. It's all good.
Yeah, no,
let me add one thing to that. Authorybrand.com/go. Most people I run across who do write a book, have an idea, and they start writing or hire someone and start writing, and they come out with it and they're all nervous and the book comes out. And that is the absolute wrong path. I do things backwards. So I take a lesson from manufacturing and think, okay, what do they do when they come out with a brand new thing? Well, they do a focus group. They study, they analyze, they ask. So we actually have a very defined process. We call it vet and validate, where we'll take a dozen covers and titles and test it and survey and pull it out before the book is written. I want the cover to be really attractive and compelling. If that works, great. We also do an Amazon analysis. We'll take 100 three-star reviews from Amazon in your category. We ignore the one-star reviews. Somebody's mad. And five-star reviews are generally somebody's mother. But a three-star review gives us great intel, right? It tells us what they liked, what they didn't like, and most importantly, what they would have liked to have read in that book. We collate that into a spreadsheet and a pie chart and go, here's what your audience is saying. Don't do this, do this, please. Someone write about this. It's amazing intel. And we've tested the cover multiple times to focus groups. So we go to write the book, we pre-sold it. And in some cases, we've pre-sold a lot, depending on who you talk to. And that's one of the tricks that I'll share with you on the call on authorbrand.com/go. I'll say how one customer pretty much pre-sold 63,000 books, about a $1.2 million book deal without really breaking a sweat. It took them 6 months to do it, but good money.
That's incredible. Well, I will tell you, we will definitely be doing work together for sure. It's a matter of time because there's a fun exercise that I do every now and then. I did it this morning. I meant to start by telling you about this and I totally forgot. So every now and then, randomly, I will do a little exercise with myself where I'll say, what's the exact question I ask? Because I don't really ask myself the question since I just know the question now, but the question I would word out is, what can I do right now to be ahead of the market? Right? My wife and I have a joke. Whenever it comes to investing, we're like the worst at timing crap. We just like, I buy high, I sell low. Like I just got that shit. Like, you know, but you know where I've been really good is in my business. I've always been ahead of the trends. I've always been in many ways in the information marketing world, a trendsetter. And it's because I asked myself this question quite a bit. So right now there's a huge trend going on. And I notice it and I'm like, I don't want to be a part of the trend. So what can I do right now to get ahead of the market and set myself apart? And I almost always will have this answer just kind of come, right? It's not something I sit there and like, feel. For anyone watching, it's 20 years in the industry. So now pulse is there. Like, that's why it's half my life. I've learned. And the first answer that came to me was write more books. That was literally with what I feel we have coming up with the recession, with the economic change, with weird things happening in the world. People are getting a little tighter with their wallets. People are getting a little bit more concerned. I don't know. Is there definitely a recession? Is there not? I think we keep punting the can and I feel like something's going to happen. But the point is, no matter what the economic times are, bad or good, people still buy stuff. People still spend money.
Yeah.
And people always buy books. And I just feel like for me, and I've also reached a place in my life now where I did an analysis a few years ago where I was like, hey, if you infused another $100 million into my bank account tomorrow, what would I do with it? Absolutely nothing different in my life. I would be driving the same cars, living in the same home.
Love it.
It's great. I'm not saying I'd say no to a $100 million infusion in my bank account, but it wouldn't change my life. So like at some point over the last couple of years, my life, my purpose changed. It's all about reach and impact and people. And that's why, by the way, reaching and expanding into India has been such an interesting thing for me because people volume just there, right? So now when you start to think about that, you're like, well, I can sell my $20,000, $25,000 mastermind. That's great and impact these people, but I can't do that to the masses. But I can sell a book. I could sell hundreds. I've already sold hundreds of thousands of books. So I don't know if this inspires even one person who's listening. I really believe in this. I think you got to get a book out of you. I think it's a great credibility builder. It's a great legacy builder. It'll help you. You know what? I think just the process of answering these three questions. I know you said two. I made them into three. I think this is the aha of the podcast. I think if you're listening, you may not even write the book, but if you answer these three questions, you're going to find a lot of fulfillment in life. And that is, what do you want to say that's not already been said? Who's your audience and why? You know, and I love the fact that you said, Doug, you're like, hey, fame and money is fine. You could say that. That's your why.
Who you are.
Yeah, it's fine. Right. But still, like, there's got to be a deeper purpose. And I think I want to leave it at that. And if you guys are listening and thinking and you want to go further, authoryourbrand.com/go. I do want to ask one question that has nothing to do with this topic, Doug. And I've been meaning to ask, how'd you meet Jen?
Online.
Wow. Okay. Awesome.
Oh, there's a longer answer. I'll share with you next weekend, but there's a longer answer. But yeah, we got engaged during COVID and traveled the world. But we, it was a mess trying to get her in the United States, but yeah, we definitely did it.
That was a part. I know she was not in the US, right, when you met. That was why I was fascinated by how you guys met. Yeah.
2 years of dating overseas was very exciting times.
Well, I mean, so I met my wife in India. She used to work for me at my office in India, and so we were long distance for 5 years, except I used to go back every month. So I used to go 1 month there, 1 month here, 1 month there. But power duo, love it. Can't wait to see you guys this weekend at the Board of Experts Mastermind. And everyone, authoryourbrand.com/go. Take them up on it. But be serious if you're going to do it, okay? Be serious. And even if you end up not working with Doug and Jen, just you do this on your own. But remember, there are legacies. There's generations coming before you. I mean, after you. You want to be remembered or you want to be forgotten? To me, that's a straight answer. I want to be remembered and I want my knowledge to go down generations and generations. So with that said, Doug, thank you very much, my friend. It has been an honor. And to the rest of you, get your book published. Go get it done. This is Onyx and God reminding you, when life pushes you, stand straight, smile, and write about it. Write a book about it. With that said, everyone, signing off. Hey, make sure you click subscribe, leave a comment, click like on all the audio podcast platforms. Subscribe, leave us a great review. Tell everybody, including your grandmother, to listen. Let's get this podcast to the top. All right. Love you guys. Bye.